Hey, I'm George Corliss.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And welcome to Good Growing with a Garden Gal. And we've talked about a variety of things today. And now we're at the crop of the month and probably the best time to be talking about this specific crop, apples. And Teresa, before we get going, how many different types of apples are there? There has to be literally hundreds now.
There's literally thousands.
Thousands.
There was an apple inventory book written in the early part of the 1900s, and that had close to 2,000 varieties in it.
And how do they keep coming up with these different varieties?
You know, apples are prolific at pollinating each other, and there's incredible variability when they pollinate each other. You know the story of Johnny Appleseed.
Right.
And he was just collecting seeds from any apples and broadcasting them. And when those seeds grow up, two seedlings, even from the same apple, could be different. There's just tremendous genetic variability within an apple seed.
And they taste wonderful. And they all have different tastes and different,
textures, colors,
yeah.
Keeping quality.
And what is that? It's a fairly new one, I think, to Michigan. I'm trying to think of the name of it. Name some apples off there.
Kind of. Sweet Tango is a new one to
Michigan. I haven't heard of that one.
Honeycrisp is
very
popular.
That's the one. Mm-hmm. I have Dr. Neil Goodman, a very good friend of ours. He just, when those first came out, he just didn't want any other type of apple. He wanted those. And people would say, well, what can I get you for a gift, you know, for thank you for what he had done here, there, or whatever. And he says, just get me a small little, you know, bunch of those, you know, apples like that. And I was just amazed. But boy, then I tasted one. And they taste so, I don't know what to even say. They all have different tastes. But I really enjoyed that one, too. Have you got favorites?
I like I like one that doesn't grow very well in Michigan, quite honestly, a good Granny Smith. It takes a lot more heat than we have here in Michigan, but that's one of my favorites.
Is that the green ones?
It's the green ones. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think a lot of people use those in juicing.
They're
because of the tartness?
Yeah, I happen to like the tart flavor, but, you know, there's lots of varieties. And both of those varieties that we just mentioned, Honeycrisp and the Granny Smith, they're not necessarily suited for backyard growing. The Honeycrisps, although they're adapted to our climate, they're kind of a prima donna. They're susceptible to some of our diseases, very susceptible. And plus, they also have a pretty high calcium requirement. And if they don't get enough calcium, they get a disorder known as bitter pit. So they're not great for the backyard grower. And Granny Smiths, they're not great for a backyard grower here in the north because they just take more heat units than we have here. So if you want to grow apples, there's plenty of varieties that are adaptable, but you should do a little research. Find out first, you know, what kind of apple do you like, and then what's going to be well suited to your growing conditions and what's going to be relatively easy for you to take care of.
Now, I notice my wife is from down around the Sparta area, and you called that the
Fruit Belt.
The Fruit Belt.
Or Fruit Ridge they have
fruit,
up there.
Fruit Ridge. And, of course, they have peaches, and they have grapes, and they have apples. And they have a variety of different kinds of apples. What would be the best for the backyard gardener, you know, to grow themselves? If they were going to go to a nursery and pick up some different stock and plant, do they usually just plant a couple of trees a year, or do they plant a whole orchard, you know, a lot of times? Or does it depend on the person and what they're looking for?
It depends on the person for that.
Okay.
But one thing I would suggest to all of our backyard growers is to look for an apple variety that is resistant to scab. And the reason I say that is scab can be a devastating disease, especially in springs and summers like we had this year that were so moist. If you plant a variety that's not resistant to scab, and you want decent quality apples, you're going to have to be out there spraying once every 7 to 10 days through the whole summer. So it's much better with a fungal disease like scab to do prevention. And we do have varieties now that are immune to scab. Some of them are Nova Spy, Williams Pride, Pristine, Liberty. All of those apples are immune to scab. So if you're a backyard grower, you can plant those varieties and not even have to worry about a spray program for scab.
Now, the spies, are those the apple pie making ones? Is that the ones they kind of search out for apple pies?
Right. But I wanted you to hear that the one I was talking about was a Nova spy. In other words, a new spy. And that one has the same qualities of the spy for pie baking that we like, but it has that new quality of being immune to apple scab.
Okay. I just remember this must have happened 20, 30 years ago. Some friends of mine, we were bow hunters, and we were always looking for apple orchards, you know, that were abandoned most of the time, where we could pick up apples, you know, to draw the deer in. And we had found this one place. We asked the neighbors and stuff like that, sure, you're welcome to go over there. And we went to one, and there was probably 20 trees, you know, around this older home that had dilapidated and stuff. But it started out with smaller apples, about the size of maybe a half a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started picking. The tree was just loaded, and we just drove the truck underneath it, and we started picking, just throw it in the back. And all of a sudden, I told my buddy, I said, well, look over there. And there was another tree that had a little bit bigger apples. And then there was another one that had a little bit bigger apples. And then we got some that they must have been about the size of a softball, and they were spies. Oh, my mother-in-law, I thought she was going to die when she saw them. She says, you're not feeding them to the deer. I'm getting those. And she made all kinds of things with them. But if people are looking for pies of their specific apples, how about apple sauce or apple cider and those other things? Is there different things that you want for different ones, or is it a combination?
There are varieties that people like. And boy, it's so much personal preference, George, because I've made sauce out of what people call dessert apples and what people would call cooking apples, and I like them both. Same with cider. I've made them from both. I think that's really a personal preference.
Okay. And then, so let's say we're going to go to the nursery and we're going to get, you know, some seedlings. Is that what you call them?
Trees at that point.
Most of them aren't going to be bearing fruit at that time, right? How long is it going to take before they're going to be bearing fruit?
Well, I have to go a little deeper into the discussion of rootstocks here.
Right.
You've heard of the term like a dwarf fruit tree or a semi-dwarf.
Okay.
There's three broad categories. We've got dwarf, semi-dwarf, and standards. And that goes from small to large in terms of how big that tree is going to get in maturity. And that's all dependent on rootstock. And along with size, you know, with the eventual size that the tree will get, that rootstock also helps determine how quickly that tree will fruit. If it's a tree, a variety that's been grafted onto a dwarf rootstock, it will start bearing at an earlier age than that same variety grafted onto a standard size rootstock. So it's not just a variety, it's, well, which kind of rootstock has that variety been grafted onto?
Okay, I gotcha. And so backyard gardeners, what would be a nice orchard for them? How many trees?
For apple trees?
Right.
Well, first of all, you have to have a minimum of two different varieties because you need cross-pollination. For instance, let's say you bought two Liberty apples. Well, you won't get trees, two Liberty apple trees. You won't get apples if that's all you've got because you have to have another one that's compatible with it to pollinate it. So you do need to mix that up. So the bare minimum is two, but you can get a whole lot of apples off of two fruit trees. It depends how much you want to do preserving. There are some apples, generally ours, apples that ripen early in the summer don't keep very long, and generally the ones that ripen late into the fall, they keep for longer. So next question is, do you want to just eat them fresh, or do you want to put them up into sauce, you know, preserve them in some way? Two full-size apple trees are a lot of apples, and that might be plenty for a homeowner.
Mm-hmm. And so when we're looking at these, I noticed, like I said, my wife lived down in Sparta before she married me and moved up here. They trim the trees funny. They trim them like Christmas trees.
Yeah, they do. They trim them quite hard, and there's reasons for that. When you first plant a tree, what you want to do is you want to try and build a framework from those limbs that's going to be strong, that can bear the weight of the fruit. Because if you've got a lot of long limbs, the branches could break once the fruit crop gets on there. So when you're first pruning it, you want to do a couple things. You want to think about, all right, maybe I want four or five branches radiating from the middle of the tree, from the center stem, that are going to be my really strong, we call them scaffold branches. They're going to be able to bear a lot of weight. And a strong branch is one that has an angle that's close to 90 degrees. In other words, a very wide angle. A narrow, tight angle is not a strong connection, and it's more likely to break. So we do want to prune our trees so that they've got very strong, very wide branch angles. And then once you get that basic structure in place, the next thing you're going to think about is you want to have good light penetration and good wind penetration to help with both developing the fruit and with keeping those diseases at bay. Good air circulation is really key to helping keep those fungal diseases down. So that's why when you look at a commercial orchard, you look at that and you go, oh my gosh, there's Charlie Brown Christmas trees there. But yeah. that's what you want. I tell folks who come to our workshops to think if you threw a flaming football through that tree, you don't want any branches to catch fire. That's how open you want it to be.
Wow. And then, but you see a lot of the older stock that's been out there for 50 or more years, it's completely the opposite.
Yeah, maybe they're too big to even get to pruning in here. We've got some of those on our property, some old trees that were there when we bought the place. And yeah, we've just given up trying to prune those. They're just too big.
So when you see some of these older orchards that are around a dilapidated house, or you knew there was some sort of a structure there years mm-hmm. ago, is there any way to bring those back into fruit-bearing, real glory years?
It's possible. There was some research done at Michigan State where they tried taking some of these older trees and then very, very heavily pruning them back to almost nothing. And they were able to successfully rejuvenate those apple trees, bring them into healthy production again. So it's possible. Apples are pretty forgiving with pruning. It's hard to prune an apple too much.
Wow, that's a good thing too. So it's kind of planting apples for dummies kind of here.
Yeah. And in just a normal situation where you're not taking an old gnarly tree and trying to bring it back, but in a normal situation, you do want to remove about a third of the wood every year.
A third?
A third.
Now, is that, I know when you trim back like roses and things, you can actually see a lot of the dead wood that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Will you see the same type of an instance when it comes to apple trees or other fruit trees?
No, because if you think about roses, most roses that I know, their stems only live for one, maximum 2 years, depending on the type of rose. That's not the same for an apple tree. So although you do want to remove any dead wood, you're not going to find the abundance of dead wood in an apple like you would a rose.
Now, what about, I notice in a lot of the commercial fields, they really try to keep the grass down, if not bare, around the base of the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be a prevention for something. What would it be?
Well, it's a lot to get the water and the nutrients to the apples instead of to something else. Now, a homeowner, you don't necessarily have to do that. In fact, there's one prominent organic grower out in New Hampshire who has a way of growing trees, apple trees, that doesn't involve that really bare soil at all. He does mow it a bit with a scythe, not with a mechanical lawnmower, with just a scythe, and he lets the foliage from the plants drop. But he likes all the biological activity that happens in there and the nutrient cycling that happens. But again, that's a pretty advanced technique. It's a master conductor of an orchestra technique. And if people want to read up about that technique, his book is called The Organic Apple Grower. And he has lots of information in there.
Now, when you're talking about diseases and insects and varmints,
mm-hmm.
okay, do mice or chipmunks or anything like that, do they like apple trees as far as chewing on the bark and things?
Mice can be a big problem. And one thing that we do is there's a material called hardware cloth, which if you think about a window screen, just think upping the size a whole lot on that and making it sturdier. It's actually wire. You go to any hardware store and they should have hardware cloth. And I essentially make a tube around the main trunk of the tree, and I make it tall enough so that any rabbits or mice that are on top of the snow in the winter still can't get to the tree. So we're looking at about a 4 foot tall tube of hardware wire that goes around the tree. And another thing that we do is we paint the trunks of the tree so that they don't get sun scald in the winter, don't have that problem of heating up and then splitting when the sun goes down because the bark cools rapidly. And you can do that. Wow. But there's a trick. You've got to use latex paint. You want it to be pure white, and you want to thin it half with water. So 50% paint, 50% water. And you can paint the trunks in the fall. And that way, that helps with what they call Southwest disease, which is that cracking of the bark because the sunlight heats it up unevenly.
Let's go back just a little bit.
Sure.
When we start getting our first harvest or second harvest, is it better to pick those apples off of the tree so that the tree can grow stronger before producing apples, or should we just let it go?
It depends a bit on the size of the that the tree was when you bought it. I've seen in some of the big box stores, you can buy an apple tree that already has blossoms on it. In that case, yes, I would definitely pick off all those blossoms and not let the tree form fruit at all. If you planted the tree much younger, you might be able the first year to let it fruit. But you want to make sure that that tree has had a chance to get its root system well established and get its energy into building its root system, its energy into building a strong branch system. And once those two goals have been achieved, then you can start letting it fruit.
Okay. So what about disease and insects? What are we looking for there to try to help the tree to just explode so that it got all these beautiful blossoms and then apples?
Up here, our main concern with disease is that apple scab and prevention.
Now, what does that look like?
It will look like gray splotches on the leaves, or on the apples, it will look like brown, corky places.
Is it kind of like a scrape on our skin?
A little bit, yeah.
Kind of like that? Okay.
And a very mild infection of apple scab, you can just peel away with, like a potato peeler, peel your apples with that. But if it's a severe infection, it's going to make the apple totally unusable. So we want to prevent. And if you haven't planted your orchard yet, plant a variety that's immune to scab. If you've already planted your orchard, then start with orchard sanitation, and that means that in the fall when those leaves drop, you don't leave them there over winter. You rake them up or you mow them, and if you mow them, you help with the decomposition. So you can mow them and leave them in place and then spray some kind of nitrogen fertilizer like blood meal over the top of them to help them decompose, because what you don't want is you don't want to leave those spores from the apple scab disease there on the floor of your orchard so that in the spring they can reinfect the tree. So you want to remove that source of infection. Sometimes that's not possible. The trees are too big, or your neighbor has trees, and so whatever your neighbor does is going to affect your trees. If you do need to spray, there are organic options. Most of them involve some kind of element like sulfur or copper, and you can use those. And there's other ones out there that are certified for use in organic agriculture. And I would promote for the homeowner, that's probably safest. But always follow the label. Read the label very closely. You need to start those sprays as soon as the buds break in the spring, and then you need to continue them on a 7 to 10 day schedule through the midsummer.
And what about insects?
Insects are two main insects for around here for apples are coddling moth and apple maggots. And both of those can be controlled by some kind of barrier method. If you're a backyard orchardist, the easiest thing to do is as soon as the petals fall off and you can see those little green apples there, you can cover them up with one of two things, or one of three things, actually. You can take those little nylon stocking footings. And this is doable for a backyard grower. It's too much work for a commercial orchard. But you can actually cover those little green apples with those footies, and the insects can't get to them. There's also paper bags that they sell for that same purpose. And the other thing, it's less labor intensive, and this is used on a commercial scale, is there is a clay product called Surround. And it's just a finely ground clay meant for agricultural use. And you spray this clay on the tree so that your tree is just about white, and you have to respray after heavy rains. You want to keep it so the tree is just about white, and that's just a deterrent. It doesn't kill any insect, but it makes it so the insect would say, I don't really want to go here, I'm gonna go somewhere else. So it's a nice product. It's very safe.
Now, how about when you pick an apple off a tree and you bite into it and you bit into something else besides apple?
You mean you found a little worm?
I found a little worm.
A little extra protein
for you?
That's
right. There you go.
I don't know what to say. It's fine.
It's a mystery meat.
It's a mystery meat, or you just cut around it.
Okay. But those maggots, where are they coming from? Are those from moths or what?
Yeah, they're both from moths. And it's the larval stage of a moth.
Do they ever, and I don't know if I'd ever seen this before, almost like a white basket of some kind that they hang up in the trees? Is that to attract the male moths, or how does that do that?
A lot of the commercial orchardists do use scent lures or pheromone lures. I haven't seen them in a homeowner type of setting, but they do exist. There's another one that's used for apple maggots where you can take a red ball or even a red apple and you coat it with a substance called tanglefoot, which is basically just very sticky. It's a very descriptive name because the moths are attracted to that bright red thing that kind of looks like an apple, and their feet just get stuck in the tanglefoot. So that's another effective strategy.
Wow. They keep using a lot of different ways to tackle these problems, don't
they? They do, yeah.
That's just amazing. Well, folks, that's going to be our program for today. I don't know about you, but I learned a lot, and I just really appreciate Teresa coming in. Teresa, if somebody wanted to contact you personally, how would they do that? Or if they want to contact cohort in crime in the different counties that they're in, how would they do that?
Well, I'm with the Wexford Conservation District, and I assist people who live in Wexford County, Michigan. There's a conservation district covering every county in the state of Michigan and Illinois and pretty much in the country, so they could just search for conservation district in their county. Here in Wexford County, our phone number is 231-775-7681.
And I just want to tell you how much we appreciate you coming in. It's just,
well, thanks for having me, George.
I enjoy it a lot myself. I'm sure our listeners do. And I just want to thank you folks for tuning in. Hey, I'm George Corliss.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And you've been listening to Good Growing with a Garden Gal.